This is the Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family, they never knew. My family, they never knew.
My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is Pam Rayford, teacher of philosophy, sociology, and world cultures at Oyster River High School. We discussed the evolution of teenage life in the past 20 years, growing up in the suburbs, and finding your happy place, among other things. Pam also shared some of the surprising silver linings of her recent cancer diagnosis, showing her unique, amazing ability to remain positive and grateful, even at an extremely difficult time. She is the best. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. So how's your summer been?
It's been good. It's been, a different summer for sure.
Of course.
But it's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your day-to-day like now?
My day-to-day really can vary a little bit. I mean, I feel like my life has gotten really simple.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like just having been diagnosed with cancer and sort of going through the treatment that, I have this, like, my life has gotten smaller, my world's gotten smaller, but it's not necessarily bad. I think there's still a lot of richness in there. It's just much simpler. But it's day to day. I think knowing how I'll feel, I just don't know.
Right.
I know that most people can't really predict that, but I feel like that's even more so.
Of course. Yeah.
So I'll wake up and have a good day and then I'll be super psyched. So like that sort of shapes how I go about my day as well and be like, woohoo, I feel good today.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I proceed from there.
I bet you appreciate feeling good a lot more. Whereas like, before you would just, if you feel good, then you kind of see that as the default.
Totally.
And now it's like, oh, I feel good. Like, yes, I can do stuff today.
Totally. Understanding the gift of physical and mental health is very profound at the moment, for sure.
Wow. So I guess I want to understand the whole Pam story. Cause I feel like you're someone who, I mean, I think I met Guy pretty early after moving to the area and then met you soon thereafter meeting him. But you and I haven't had a ton of just like one-on-one quality time. So I want you to tell me where it all began.
All right. So I was born in Levittown, Pennsylvania. So I grew up in it was the second Levittown. Levittown, New York was one of the first suburban communities that were built post-World War II. So it was really interesting in that it was, very predictable. And it's the community I grew up in, every house was identical. So if I went over to my friends' houses, I knew exactly where the bathroom was, where the kitchen was. And I'm like, this is very familiar and very comfortable. So growing up, I think was pretty ideal. It was safe. I could ride my bike anywhere. I had an awesome family. But as I hit my teenage years, it started to feel pretty claustrophobic.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, this is all the same.
Right.
My brother took me, he's about 6 years older than me. In the summer of my junior year of high school, he took me on this awesome road trip where we went all through New England. And that was really although I had traveled with my family, I hadn't really thought about where else I would want to live. Mm. So coming up to New England was pretty mind blowing.
Mm.
And I was like, escape from Levittown,
totally.
Which was awesome. So we went by UNH campus and to New Hampshire in the White Mountains. And I was like, this will be my new home.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I always find that people from New England find it weird that other people could see New England as sort of romantic, but yeah. I had the same experience because we would come up to Star Island every summer. And the big treat for me driving from New York to New England was getting to go to Friendly's.
That's awesome.
They're like, why do you care about going to Friendly's? It was like, because the Conehead Sundae is amazing.
Totally.
And yeah, it had definitely like a sort of a magical attachment to New England that, you know, now that I've lived here for a while, I'm like, oh, like, no, I don't want to go to Friendly's at all.
Yeah.
I still remember how special it, I guess it just sort of feels special to see anything that's different.
Totally.
From what you used to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's old. It has character. Mm-hmm. There's something, it's just a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. It must have been weird when they first built those cookie cutter suburbs that there was just nothing there, right? Cornfields or whatever.
Cornfields, yep, farmland.
And they just mowed them down and then just like plop, 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 a bunch of identical houses all next to each other.
Crazy. My brother and sisters, who again are a bit older than me, remember a truck coming by and digging two holes in front of everyone's house and then planting two maple trees in front of everyone's
Whoa.
House. So it was really like, boom, boom, boom. That's,
wow.
We all had two maple trees.
Assembly line.
Yeah,
you know?
It really was. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. I wonder how they have, or if they have changed at all, like, or as time's gone on and people have changed the houses and stuff like that, to see, like, how long would it take for a cookie cutter suburb to actually gain its own kind of personality, and like, how is Levittown, Pennsylvania different from Levittown, New York now, like 70 years later or whatever?
Yeah, totally. I think you could, at least when I was growing up, I felt like there was some uniqueness with the landscaping and building additions and that kind of stuff, but not really.
Yeah.
It was pretty minor.
Oh, yeah. It's also so weird that they just gave them the same name, too. They're like, yeah, it's
Levittown.
It's our brand.
totally. And I lived in Red Rose Gate, and every street in my little section started with an R.
Huh.
And then next door was Forsythia Gate, and every street in that section started with an F. It was very bizarre.
There was one section of the town I grew up in called Manor Haven, where the streets were all alphabetized, but they were each like the name of a tree. So it was like Ash, Beech.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what C was, but you know, all the way up to like, you know, Sycamore or something like that, you know. But all that sort of like suburban orderliness.
Totally.
it's going to have a little more character than just a grid with numbers on it, but it's also very, you know where you are.
Totally predictable, familiar.
Yeah. So when did you eventually leave Pennsylvania for good?
So when I, really I left, I think the summer after graduating from high school, I went and worked at as a camp counselor in the Adirondacks and then went from there to UNH and was never returned home other than to visit.
Right.
Yeah. It's wild to me, the large number of young people who go back and live at home. Mm. And again, I loved my family, but I just couldn't have imagined. It was so exciting to be like, see you later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never did for more than like a month or two. I always wanted to have my own place. But I think it's more and more common these days. Like, like probably starting as a matter of financial necessity,
totally.
But then as it becomes more normal, then there becomes these sort of like cultural things about it where it's like, yeah, if I don't think this is weird and I'm not ashamed of it and it's just a fact of the matter, then how is that like affecting a generation?
Totally.
Like, some people would probably say, like, this is why you still have people in their 30s acting like kids, you know what I mean?
Totally. I definitely feel that way. It's interesting to think about where and when independence comes for younger people.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty, like, by-the-book, rule-follow-y kind of kid. Didn't go too far from home until, like, and even like chose the college I went to because it was close to home. And then after college, I think was when I had my full sort of breakout. Like, whoa, what about being far from home? You know?
So exciting.
Yeah. And then some people as teenagers are just like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
So have you just lived in this area since UNH?
Yeah, as a sophomore at UNH, I had a boyfriend who had a car, and we drove to Portsmouth, and my mind was blown again. I was like, whoa, what is this town? And just fell madly in love with Portsmouth. And really, that just became my... I didn't even think about it. After graduating, I just knew I was going to move to Portsmouth and establish roots there, and it just feels really very much like my home. It was nice to just feel so clear and sure about that.
What was it like then, and what were the things about it then that you fell in love with?
It was so different, and obviously in some ways, I think you could feel the sense of community. People were just friendly, and, you know, walking into a place like Siri's Bakery, I don't know how to describe it, but it was so unlike Levittown and sort of being in the, I don't know, just this warmth and down to earth aspect of it just felt really appealing. It is interesting to think of how to describe what that is about Portsmouth. And I think Portsmouth still has that. I unfortunately think it's getting harder to find as it gets wealthier and more developed. But there was just a connection community that is just so palpable, and something relaxed about it. There was a little soup kitchen or like little cafe over where the Pink Bamboo is now. I think it's that Chinese restaurant. And I walked in, and the man behind the counter was deaf, so he had to shout really loud, "Your order." And he had two basset hounds that would just hang out inside. And I'm like, why are there dogs in here? This is so great. And you would pay for your soup after you ate it. Like, all of that was like, this is so... like, it just was so not, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but it was just so, it had its own set of rules that were so unusual and so refreshing.
Character.
Like, totally. That's it. Yeah. We'll just do it this way. Okay. Awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I wonder where those, well, not the Basset Hounds, but yeah. I wonder where the guy, or like what became of all those places.
Yeah, know? Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there people that you met and became friends with then that you're still friends with now? Or?
Yeah, I think quite a few of the women at the bakery, Penny, who owns the bakery, and Gail, and Jen, who works there. So again, going to Siri's Bakery is just like such a nice connection and tether to when I first moved here. Guy met pretty quickly. Yeah, but there are definitely a number of people who are still familiar faces, and Bruce Pingree, for one, would be, he hired me at the press room. That was one of my first jobs, waiting tables there. And definitely some nice connections there.
How long did you work at the press room?
I worked there for 9 years.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It was great. I waited tables. I did the Friday night shift with like the musicians. I knew their order by heart. No one need to like tell me anything. I just bring their drinks.
Nice. Oh, at first I thought you meant like their set list. Like, now they're going to play Sweet
too.
Home Chicago.
That too, for sure.
That's awesome. I'm really enjoying learning more about people's lives here before I got here because, you know, it's, you can just end up by default, assuming that everyone was doing what they're doing when you met them for the previous, their entire lives.
Totally.
You know? Or they were just like waiting for you to show up and they were like, all right, go act busy. You know? Yeah. So like hearing about people's sort of previous lives is really interesting to me. Yeah. I had heard all this stuff about the Elvis room, the Elvis room, the Elvis room. People hold it and such, like, it's so revered. But then when I talked to Michael Winters, it was like, oh, I had no idea that he was like involved with that place.
Yeah.
That was like his place kind of, learning about the sort of previous stops along the way. Yeah. So was that your kind of your whole life when you first moved to town? Like, what were you doing with yourself?
Yeah. When I first moved to town, I worked at the press room, which was great. And then the most important thing I think I did is I started working at the Feminist Health Center, which I think has a new name now, but it's still a health center that is in Greenland, New Hampshire, that provides gynecological health care. And we did a lot of HIV testing at that time period, and provides abortion services. And it was a run as a collective, and it had a very strong feminist philosophy behind it. And those women changed my life. They just really helped me find my voice, and it was really an exciting time to work, do what I felt was really important work, and to have such incredible role models in my life. And I was I learned to be a crisis counselor. I just learned so many incredible skills there.
Wow.
So it was great.
Yeah, that must have. I'm guessing that there weren't probably places like that in
not
Midtown,
at all. You know? No, definitely not. Yeah. Yeah.
It's can be eye-opening how like the kinds of businesses and services and types of people that make a town kind of progressive.
Yeah.
You know, and remembering when you live in a town that's progressive, that not everywhere has places like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like that's what made me feel at home. I felt like especially my junior and senior year in Levittown, I had a really sweet group of friends, but I felt like I had less and less in common with them. And mm-hmm. it was just nice to sort of find, quote unquote, just my people or mm-hmm. people that were just place that just felt true and genuine and just a place I belonged.
Yeah. What do you think it is that makes someone your people?
It feels sort of exclusive to say that. You're not my people. You are. Yeah. But I guess it's not so much like my people. That's probably a bad word, I think, or a bad way to say that. I think it's just a place where I felt like I could fully be myself and be valued for mm-hmm. that person, even if it was someone who had different political perspectives than me, or we didn't have to be identical people, but I just felt valued and like I belonged. Mm. And there's a respect for people to be valued for who they were. That was really refreshing here. So again, going back to character, like all kinds of characters were part of the Portsmouth community, and I felt like there was just really value, valuing people.
Yeah. And I guess inherent in the idea of like a group of people who value you for who you are is that they're interested to get to know who you are,
yeah,
and that they don't just make assumptions about who you are, or you know, they think that they can size you up at a glance.
Totally.
That you know that if you want to. If you have a culture of getting to know people for who they are, then there's an openness and an inquisitiveness that a lot of places probably don't have. I think for me, one of the big, probably like after college, is when I started to identify that my people were not defined by how they dressed or what kind of music they listened to or what kind of movies they watched and stuff like that. And, sort of figuring out more of the intricacies of what makes someone attractive to you, basically.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really true. And I think it's interesting to think about how a community is set up, whether it allows for those opportunities to connect with other people. And I feel like growing up in Levittown, there were so few opportunities to get to know the person behind the counter who was serving me my food, but here in Portsmouth, there was just ample opportunity to begin those conversations and to get a sense of who somebody was.
Yeah. So how long were you involved over there at the Feminist Health Center?
I worked there for a long time as well, but I don't know. I think maybe 6 or 7 years. And then I finally, much to my parents' happiness, decided to go back to graduate school and get a real career from their perspective. And that's when I went in and got my teaching certification. But I was 29 when I did that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So how did they see your life up till that point where they were like, oh, she's just fucking around, you know?
Yeah, I think they kept on waiting for me to do something more serious. And I think they always were very supportive. And I was financially independent, so I felt very clear, like I'm making great decisions for myself. I'm not asking you for money. Yeah. I'm paying my rent and I'm really happy. But I think they just wanted that longer term vision of security that comes with, you know, more professional career or whatever that might look like.
Yeah. It's funny though, because it's not like you were, you know, juggling on the beach or something like
totally.
That. You were doing something super fulfilling and interesting and important, you know? So,
yeah.
But, you know, I think parents can have a hard time, or they have their own ideas in their mind about what is and isn't sort of stable or normal.
Totally. And again, I love my mom dearly. She's been a huge support. But I remember even when I was in college and graduating, I think there was this like, wait, what, you're just going to go to Portsmouth and wait tables? And at that point, there were a lot of CIA recruiters on college campuses. I'm not sure why it was very true. And she's like, why don't you join the CIA? And I was like, Mom, have you met me? Like,
why would I join this?
What part of me would make you think I would be good for the CIA? So that was funny.
Because you're compassionate, interesting, and affable.
And it's a good career, and it has security and retirement benefits.
Wow. What year was that?
I graduated from UNH in 86.
Wow. So I wonder what was like going on in the world that the CIA was like.
It was still Cold War, you know, Reagan.
Right.
So it was, it's wild to think about that.
That is crazy. That is crazy. Yeah. And like who works in the CIA? Actually, I know someone who works in the CIA. He was one of Anne's ex-boyfriends.
Wow.
And he like put her down as a reference, and they like, when we first moved here, and she was living at Sanctuary Arts in Elliott, and like a CIA agent came to Sanctuary Arts to like talk to Anne about him. And she was like, yeah, you know, he's a good guy.
<That's>
We're cool.
No major problems. I don't think that's wild.
Yeah. So then you went back to school and you got your degree in education.
Yes. Yep. Got a master's in teaching from UNH and did my internship at Oyster River High School, and then was super lucky to get a job there the next year.
Wow.
So I've only taught at Oyster River High School.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how has that journey been? Because this is now, you know, how long have
I've
you been there?
I've taught there for 21 years.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
To think about. That has been awesome. I just feel really, I love teaching, and I didn't know, poor guy went through the ringer at first when I was teaching, because it would be a roller coaster ride for him. Some days I'd come home bawling my eyes at me like, oh, I'm a terrible teacher. This is a horrible job. And then the next day I'd be like, this is the best thing ever. And fortunately that kind of stabilized after maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly hard work, but I can't imagine anything more fulfilling for myself than getting to hang out with just amazing young people and have thoughtful conversations with them.
Yeah. What do you teach there?
I teach philosophy, sociology, and world cultures.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like that would probably provide more than maybe some other subjects, the ability to kind of get to know your students and kind of get deep with them.
Totally. I'm so lucky to teach those subjects because it's very easy. It's really easy to connect topics to their own lives, which I think is so important. And especially in a class like philosophy, where if it's done well, in my view, it has to be personal because it's all about what we think and why we think it.
Mm.
It's also really liberating to teach philosophy because it's not a debate. I'm really careful to make sure to foster a community where we don't have to come to the same opinion. The whole idea is to figure out what we think and why we as individuals think what we think, and hopefully have a deeper understanding of the reasons behind that. But we don't, it's not like we have to argue.
Yeah.
God exists. No, he doesn't.
Right.
This is, you know, so it's really, it allows students to delve into important ideas without feeling threatened, that they have to sort of be combative in that.
Or someone has to win.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's so important, especially right now, because I feel like that is disappearing from the cultural conversation. It's disappearing from entertainment. It's disappearing from politics. Everything is just pick a side and stick with it as staunchly as you possibly can, no matter how dumb it is, you know what
I mean? Who cares about facts? Who cares about evidence?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole beginning of the class is focused on what it means to think well. And it's really so refreshing to step back and examine that, because I feel like that, again, is something that we don't value as much as we need to as a society. And I read this really great essay not too long ago about this person was arguing that all students should have to take a philosophy course. And I would agree. I'm a bit biased, but I think there's something really, we don't talk to students enough about what it means to think well and how to present your ideas articulately without being argumentative or shutting someone down or being closed-minded. And all we see right now are examples of again, wanting to win the argument at all costs, even if that means not coming to a really insightful, thoughtful, well-reasoned and supported conclusion.
Right. You know? And seeing people who disagree with you as your enemy.
Totally. You absolutely.
Know? It's people are just so much more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. Everyone is, you know. The whole idea of like the thing that really, really gets me is political platforms, almost like regardless what's on those platforms. It's just impossible for a whole group of people to all believe the same thing about 20 different issues.
Yeah.
You know, like my neighbors next door, like, are like, they're a lesbian couple and are all for, you know, gay rights and are super progressive in that way. But like, one of them was in the army and is totally like pro military and pro law enforcement and pro gun rights. And like, they're also like Christian and were like collecting money for a mission trip. And it's like, well, yeah, some of those things don't lie on the same political platform, but they are totally authentically all of those things.
Yes.
You know, and they're great neighbors, even though we disagree about a ton. Like, they are so generous and helpful and kind, you know. And so and on a person to person, sort of like neighborhood basis, it's so much easier for people to find their commonalities and the things that they do want to talk to each other about and the things that they don't want to talk to each other about. But it's like, if we were only Facebook friends, we probably would have blocked or deleted each other, you know, but we see each other and we wave to each other and we say hi and we're nice. And it's like, oh yeah, that's real life. The thing on the computer is not.
Yes, you know? Totally. And I think that grappling with the complexity of human beings and of ideas, it takes a lot of work and effort, and that's a beautiful example of how important that is.
Yeah, but it's, I've been thinking about trying to step back my social media usage for that reason. Yeah. There are a lot of reasons that it is good and useful and helpful, promoting stuff, creating events, inviting people to things, giving people updates on life stuff, saying happy birthday, et cetera, you know what I mean? But there's also so much that it's just like, I would be so much better off if I had never seen that.
You know? I agree. And I do, again, working with young people, it's interesting to think about how this is impacting their lives and their ability to communicate with each other and their ability to have time in their own heads. Clearly, there's a lot of value to technology and social media, but I think it has a darker side that we're not paying enough attention to.
Yeah. I would bet that these past 21 years specifically have represented a time of huge change for like being a teenager, you know? So that's what, 95?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty much the internet becoming prevalent, cell phones, smartphones, you know, social media, all sort of just coming into the picture for the first time. Like, what was it, what has it been like to see those changes unfold?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I still remember my second or third year of teaching. I had a student who traveled to China, and she came back and she's like, it's so weird. Everyone there is walking around talking on the phone. And we're like, what? How is that possible? So it's amazing to see how fast things have changed and then how quickly we sort of reach a new normal with that. And I see higher rates of anxiety and depression among students. And I really truly believe that's a contributing factor. I think there's so much more pressure. I can't imagine thinking about how socially awkward high school was for me. I can't imagine adding the element of posting something on Facebook and then determining my self-worth by how many likes I get. Mm-hmm. And or who might say something mean to me. Right. And how, and or having to post a relationship or end a relationship in this public format. Right. That's so inherently superficial. Mm-hmm. But for students, it's everything. It carries so much weight. I had a student, we were talking about the importance of the impact technology has had on their lives, especially with constant texting and being mm-hmm. constantly connected. And at the end of this conversation, I had one of my students who's a junior who started to cry in class. And he said, it was so moving because he said, I come home and come to sit at the dinner table and my mom and my dad and my younger sister all have their phones out and we don't talk to each other at dinner. And he's like, it breaks my heart. And it just that world must be really challenging.
Yeah. Well, and especially to not know it another way, you know,
so yes.
The idea that today's teenagers were born in the 2000s, you know, they
know.
Didn't know there's no such thing as the world before the internet and
absolutely.
The world before cell phones and
yeah.
text messaging.
You know? I know. And even just the constant connection to parents, they, mm-hmm. I just, I don't want to glamorize my childhood because I remember older people doing that to me and being
yeah.
like, when my
back in my day
things were amazing. But just the idea of going out all day and playing in the backwoods and showing up for dinner and not texting or calling my mom
yeah.
20 times in that in that time period, I can't imagine.
That's I honestly hadn't even thought about that side of it, the connection of parents to kids digitally.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I sort of assumed that like the kids would be connected to each other
yeah.
digitally, but the parents are still in the olden times. But like, obviously that's not yeah. true. They're probably my age.
Totally. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I remember when cell phones first sort of showed up. I didn't get one until, I don't know, early 2000s, like 2002 or something like that. But when I was in graduated high school in 99, and when I was in high school, people started to have cell phones. And we were like, what do you think you are, a big shot accountant or something like that?
Totally.
Like, what do you work on, Wall Street? If someone was talking on a cell phone, you know, a few enough people had them that if someone was talking on a cell phone, I'd be like, who are you talking to?
Right. Who else has one?
Exactly.
And now I think about that for lower income students. If you don't have access to technology, you have no social connection. Mm. And that's crazy to think
yeah.
about.
Yeah. And that people don't even use it as a phone anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that texting just like.
Yeah.
Though it's funny. I was just talking the other day about how social media is like moving further and further away from writing,
mm.
you know, that it's like at Facebook, you used to like post a status update that was written and then you could post a picture. And then with Instagram, you could only post a picture. And then with Snapchat, it's just videos and it's just like emojis. And it's like, it's almost like texting. Well, with texting, at least there's still words involved.
Yes.
<You know?
laughs> Even if they're not spelled correctly or actual words, but.
Yeah, or if it's just a cartoon of a poop with a face.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that must. I can't imagine what it must be like to see those changes in real time. What is your relationship with your students like? Like, because, you know, if you had students in 1995 that still live in the area, now they're like in their mid to late 30s, you know, so like, are you able to sort of befriend them or see them around? And what's that like?
Yeah, I again, feel so lucky about the connections I've been able to form with students. And there are a number of former students who I'm still in touch with who have kids and who are these adults. It's wild to see that happen and makes me realize how old I am. But yeah, so I feel that's been one really nice thing about Facebook is the ability to connect with so many students who don't live in the area anymore and just to hear about all the really interesting things that they're doing. And I just, right before meeting with you, met with a former student for coffee at the White Heron. And it's just those connections have been really just such a gift. And I think it comes from just, again, teaching subjects that enable me to form really close connections with students in the classroom. And many of those continue, which I just has been great.
Yeah. That's cool. I also have sort of suffered from the illusion since moving here. Like I was saying, that I just imagine everyone was just still doing the same thing for all of time until I got here. And also that the same people that I know here all just sort of like were born here and then grew up and went to kindergarten together and they've all known each other since they were little kids.
Yeah.
So, but there probably are a lot of people who grew up around here who move away.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just imagining, oh, this is not like where I grew up. Like everyone here just stays.
I think that sometimes when students are graduating, they're like, I can't wait to get out of here. I'm like, you're in one of the most beautiful places in the world. But I completely understand that desire to see other perspectives. And
yeah. Or people leave and come back. But I think they do that everywhere.
I think so too.
Yeah. Growing up on Long Island, it was always just like the aspiration to leave. And I don't know too many people who've moved back to Long Island, but I think as more of my friends have kids and start families, like they probably will.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So when, and you said you met Guy like pretty early on, pretty young when you got here.
Yeah.
So that stinks.
It was a while before we started a relationship, so we were friends for a number of years, but
he's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. That's been pretty much one of the highlights of my life.
So I've been thinking lately about the idea of like a happy place or a special place, because I was out on Star Island for a week, and that is totally like my happy place. It has been since I was a little kid. And I was thinking about the fact that it has been since I was a little kid. That's and I amazing. Still get to go out there. But I was wondering, like, does everyone have a happy place, a special place, whatever? And I don't know. Do you have one?
I think I have a number in this area. And again, I think my happy place I discovered when I first came to Portsmouth, there's something again that just felt magical and just right about being here. But within this area, I would have to say Sea Point Beach. Mm. That's just where I go if I'm having a hard time. Mm. It's just very healing, and it feels like such an important connection to this place. Yeah. This place, generally speaking, as well.
Yeah, I love it there. We were there. We go there all the time with Wesley. Yeah. But then in the summertime, it's not as doggable, at least during the day. And this past weekend we went there to actually like have a beach day, you know?
Nice.
And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot this is a beach.
Yeah. You know? It's not like just a beach. A dog walk.
Yeah. You can actually like hang out here and then go swimming and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I got sunburnt on the back of my knees.
That sounds horrible. Like
places that you forget exist until they're burnt.
You know? Oh man.
Yeah, I love it there though. It's such a nice combination of beach and also other nature, you know, the sort of like marshland and then the little parkish area at the end, and you can like see out to the Isles of Shoals and like incredible views. And
sit on some of those big rocks out there. Just amazing.
and goes treasure hunting out there.
I love that. And then I love that second beach with the all the stones, and when the waves like go through those, that sound is amazing.
Totally. And this and the rocks there are like so smooth and round. It's just like, wow, nature's nature's cool.
It's totally cool.
I think that's probably my happy place around here too. I remember going there the day of the Boston Marathon bombing, where it was just like, it just like, there was this weird, crappy vibe in the air. And it was just like, I gotta go, I gotta go get fresh air.
Yeah. You know?
And that was the spot.
It's totally my go-to spot. I'm really struggling today. Going to Sea Point.
Nice.
I feel better. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I did talk to at least one previous guest about the fact that like, I've had like several emergency poop situations there.
That would be a tough place.
I feel like it's like there's something in the air there also that like activates my guts.
There's that little bathroom right by Rachel Carson.
I just learned about
that. Yeah, that's a good thing
really
to know about.
I really wish I had known that before. So what is the best moment in your whole life?
Oh man. I would say starting a relationship with Guy, and I couldn't identify one particular moment there, but that just changed everything. And I feel like it came after I ended a really difficult relationship and I had some time living on my own, which was so important. And I was ready to meet somebody who I just had done a lot of good work internally. So I just felt ready. And then Guy showed up and he also just presented a whole other way relationships could work, which was so lovely and refreshing and beautiful. It's just pretty amazing to have this kind of incredible partner in this life has been awesome.
Yeah. Though it must be so crappy for you the whole month of February.
Yeah, totally. I'm ready. I got it down now. It's funny. My birthday comes at the end of February and Guy's always just like, sorry. I'm like, no problem. I'm fine.
You should just move your birthday to March 2nd or whatever.
We pretty much do. He tries, but he's usually out of his mind at that point.
Yeah, I bet. I'm going to have to sleep for like 2 weeks. Do you have any guilty pleasures?
Yeah, I do. Guy and I watched The Challenge on TV, and it's just the worst show ever.
The MTV one?
We were just watched it the other night, and I'm like, why do we watch this? But I totally do.
I haven't watched it in a long time, but one of the like sports personalities that I listen to his podcast, Bill Simmons, he talks about how it's like the fifth major American sport and that there's like, it's not even a reality show anymore. It's like, and the contestants are like totally on steroids and they're like training all year for this thing.
Totally. And it's just so bad. Most of the time it's just these horrible drunken arguments. It's really bad TV and I don't know why I watch it, but I do.
We've all got something. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of human beings destroying the earth. Mm. I really am afraid of that. I see us, we have such incredible potential. Oh my God, we're just able to do so much. And so I still feel hopeful that we'll figure this out, but I just don't understand the mindset that continues to be destructive when we know we're so destructive. Mm. So
yeah, I've been thinking, I had a moment recently where I was thinking about that, and for a second it made me feel better, and then it made me feel way worse. Where I was like, wait a minute, we're not actually destroying the earth. We're destroying the earth as a habitable place for humans.
Yeah.
and the earth will be fine. We just won't be here when it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. And for a second, it was like, oh, the earth will be fine. Like, earth is way stronger than us. And then it was like, oh, wait a minute. That still sucks.
I know. And I wish we didn't take so many other living species with us, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It is a bummer. And it's a crappy reality to sort of realize that, like, oh, we're the generation that's doing all the damage.
Yeah. And I don't know if we're the generation. I feel like it's just this mindset that has taken hold, and we continue to play it out in terms of unregulated capitalism and free markets. We just need a new way of thinking about things. And I think it goes back to your earlier point about how we need to really look at the complexity of these big issues and spend some time really thinking about them and not get so caught up in this very polarized black and white, I need to win this argument. It's just going to take much more nuanced thinking. And I think, I know we're capable of it. But something has to shift us there.
And I don't know what it's going to take. If not already what we've already seen in terms of American political stuff and just sort of like global climate stuff, and like what would it actually have to happen for the people in charge to change course?
Absolutely. I think we need to, there has to be, we have to just wake up and start looking at things a little bit differently, I think.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about this before, but so this is like a backtrack. Tell me about the, like, I don't know if it was an award or a dedication that you got this year from the Oyster River students.
Oh yeah. They dedicated the yearbook to me, the senior class, and that was amazing and super emotional. I was asked to come in to an awards ceremony to help present awards to the social studies for students who won the social studies department award, not knowing that I was invited in because this was also going to happen. So it was just, I don't even know. I feel very deeply moved by that. And it just highlighted again how lucky I am to have a job I love so much and to be able to connect with just really extraordinary people. So I don't know what to say, but it was really just an amazing gift.
Okay. Now for something completely different.
All right. Ready?
Do you believe in past lives?
I don't think so. I don't know what I believe, though, in terms of what happens when we die, but a past life doesn't really resonate with me.
Yeah. I don't really have an opinion about it. I read this book called Many Lives, Many Masters.
Oh, interesting.
About this guy who spends the whole first couple of pages telling you, like, how legitimate and traditional of a like scientific mind he is. He's like, but then I saw something that totally changed the way I thought. And it was, you know, all this sort of like, he calls it past life regression therapy, where like people are acting out our bodies are basically inhabited by spirits, and they're the same spirits, you know, like you and I, or my spirit and your spirit, like knew each other in a previous life too. And we're all just kind of like working to resolve issues over the course of generations and generations. And I'm just sort of like, I mean, there's got to be some explanation for how messed up we all are.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but I don't necessarily buy it, but I have here written down, do you believe in ghosts/aliens/past lives? But I kind of think that like, aliens is like, it's too easy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, of course there's got to be.
This universe is so vast that I agree.
And then ghosts, I'm like, I I don't really care. But like, what's the difference, I guess, between ghosts and past lives?
Yeah.
Do you have any nicknames?
My dad used to call me Peanut because I, for a long time, didn't get taller than 3 foot, and they were worried I wasn't going to.
Whoa.
So I was really little for a while, littler even than I am now.
When did you finally catch up?
I think probably by maybe 8th or 9th grade, I started to grow again and get less short.
Whoa. Was there ever like an explanation, or was just like, yeah, she's just a peanut?
I think it was, I don't know if my parents were worried about it. Probably they wondered, but I never felt any of their anxiety. I think it was more like, you're just a peanut.
And you're like, okay, I'll start wearing a monocle and a top hat.
Absolutely.
Where did you think you'd be now?
I knew I would be somewhere other than Levittown, Pennsylvania. And so physically, after that road trip, I knew I'd be in New England. I guess this is sort of where I imagine being. So I feel really kind of grateful to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it seems like the story of your life seems to be like, once you find the thing you like, you're like, all right, I got it. We're good. You know?
Yes.
And it's just like, you haven't lived that many different places or done that many different jobs, because it's like, when you find the one you like, you're like, all right, cool.
This is it. I'm good.
Check that box off. Don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, very much. It's funny, because when I first lived in Portsmouth, so many of my friends moved out to the West Coast and were definitely still in the search. And I was like, I'm done my search. I'm here.
Yeah. So it takes different people a different amount of figuring out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a different balance of, you know, actually searching for the right places and people and jobs and et cetera. And then also sort of getting to the place with yourself where you're like, am I good? Like, am I where I need to be?
Yeah.
And, you know, because a lot of people will keep looking for a certain feeling and they keep not finding it. And it's like, well, you also have to.
Yeah.
You can't just change everything externally to find that feeling.
Absolutely. And I feel like I was lucky to find a place externally that felt so grounding, and that allowed me, I think, to do some good internal searching.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. What has the journey been like sort of emotionally dealing with your health problems lately?
It's been really interesting. I, since being diagnosed with cancer, I feel like I've entered this new world, and I feel like it will be temporary, but I was thinking a lot about this the other day. In my philosophy class, we talk a lot about identity and what is the self and who are we, not so much from a sociological perspective, but like, what are we, what makes us us? And I feel like suddenly I've become defined by this disease. Hmm. And it feels temporary, but it's really just shifted my reality in a pretty fascinating way. And just made me think about uncertainty. And I know we always live with uncertainty, but this makes that uncertainty very tangible,
right?
And very
puts it in your face.
It's right here. And so it's been very, very hard, but it's also been a pretty extraordinary gift, I think, in terms of recognizing. I always knew I had a great community, but like, seeing the depth of that love and support, and that's something I've always searched for. Again, my flee from Levittown was search for community and connection. Yeah. And that's been just really amazing. But also reflecting on my life, you know, I feel really comfortable with my life, and that feels really nice to see, just to be at a place where things are hard, but I have a lot of amazing sources of support, and I feel like I'm living my life how I want to live it. Mm. And that's been nice to reflect on and be like, this is good. There's more I want to do, but I feel good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that, you know, that outpouring of support is a mirror for the community that you guys have already built, you know, expecting nothing in return, you know, but, you know, I've kind of recognized having met Guy as like this important, like an important what if in my living here, like, you know, what if I had sort of like fallen in with a different crowd, you know,
yeah.
if I'd met other people to play music with and hang out with. And I'm so grateful for him and for you because you guys create such a like welcoming space for your friends and do such a good job of kind of connecting people that, the sort of outpouring of support that you guys have gotten, like not everybody would get it to that magnitude, but you spent so many years putting out there, just like being so supportive of all those people in, you know, sometimes small, trivial, simple ways, like you want to go get breakfast or,
yeah.
you know, want to go watch a movie or whatever. But it's, I don't know, you've done so much for so many people. And so it's, I think that everybody who has benefited from having you guys in our lives, we're just like, can we do anything, you know? Let me clean up your cat's shit box.
I know. People have been amazing. Thank you. It's really nice to hear that. And I think it's sort of that sense I had when I stepped into this community that there are just amazing people here, you know, and again, in my philosophy class, we talk a lot about what it means to live a meaningful life. And I can't think of anything more important than connecting and kindness and generosity and community. Really, that's amazing. And so to have that, so many incredible people in our lives, I couldn't, like, I just won, we won the lottery with that. You know, there's nothing that could replace that.
But you also... like you rigged the lottery because you didn't just get lucky. Like you did such a good job of actively cultivating that community and like doing your part to make it what you wanted it to be, you know? And I think that's such it's been an important lesson for me because it is so, you know, it's so easy to attribute your circumstances to those external factors and not to say, oh, well, I need to foster these relationships and and do my part in making these relationships or that community what I want it to be. And you guys have done that. So like, yeah, you're lucky, but you're also like, you're doing your part and then some, and that's like such a great example.
That's really awesome to think about. And I guess that's just been a nice affirmation that, and that's what the world needs more of, but just the power of choosing those really important things like compassion and openness and kindness and generosity. They seem so simple and so easy, but the rewards that come back are just amazing. So I always am like, let's all just do that. That would be pretty great.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that they have the power they do.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, last question.
Okay.
If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
Wow. Oh my, that is a really interesting question. I don't know that this is the right answer, but this is what comes to my mind. I would say experience well-being. Hmm. That there's something just, I think that again is connected to so many other things in life. So if I was experience well-being every day, it probably meant that other things were going pretty well.
How are you experiencing it today?
How am I experiencing it today?
Yeah.
I am experiencing it in this conversation with you.
Yes, <helped.
laughs> Totally. And just feeling, yeah, you know, things are hard, but things are good. I guess gratitude has a lot to do with it. You know?
Yeah, that seems to be a really clear theme of your attitude about your life, is that you seem really, you know, I think sort of underlying that sense of like finding the things that you like and sticking with them is that sort of grateful approach and not taking simple things for granted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty cool and I really like you a lot.
I love you, Peter. This has been awesome.
Thanks for coming over, Pam.
Thank you.